Lots of useless assistance exercises which contribute nothing to the performance of the major exercises or to sports activities, and which might do worse than merely waste time. Exercises that use only one joint, that usually require machines to do, are non-functional in the sense that they do not follow a normal human movement pattern. They also quite often predispose the joint to overuse injuries, and the vast majority of weight room injuries are produced by these exercises. This is true not only by default, since it is obvious that in a world where most people only use machines, most of the injuries will occur on machines. Isolation exercises cause tendonitis because human joints are not designed to be subjected to the stress of movements in which all of the shock, moment force, tension, and compression are exclusively applied to one joint. There is no movement that can be performed outside the modern health club that involves only the quadriceps. The only way to isolate the quads is to do an exercise on a machine designed specifically for that purpose. This is a function that hundreds of millions of years of vertebrate evolution did not anticipate. The knee is the home of many muscles, all of which have developed while working at the same time. Any exercise that deviates from the function for which the joint is designed contributes very little to the function of that joint and is a potential source of problems. Exercise machines have made several people a lot of money. And while there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, they have been a very large diversion from more productive forms of training. The pendulum swings, and barbell training is once again recognized as the superior form of exercise. Glad we could help. Programming. It is May 15th, and you decide that this year you are going to get a suntan, a glorious, beautiful, tropical suntan. So you decide to go out in the backyard, to lay out at lunchtime and catch a ray or two. You lay on your back for 15 minutes, and then flip over to lay on your belly for another 15 minutes, and then you get up, come in, eat lunch, go back to work. That night, your skin is a little pink, so the next day you just eat lunch, but the following day, you're back outside for your 15 minutes per side sunbath. You are faithful to your schedule, spending 30 minutes outside every day that week, because that's the kind of disciplined, determined person you are. At the end of the week, you have turned a more pleasant shade of brown and, heartened by your amazing results, resolve to maintain your schedule for the rest of the month. So, here is the critical question. At the end of the month, what color is your skin? If you ask 100 people this question, 95 of them will tell you that it will be really, really dark. But in fact, it will be exactly the same color it was at the end of the first week. Why would it be any darker? Your skin adapts to the stress of the sun exposure by becoming dark enough to prevent itself from burning again. That's the only reason it gets dark, and it adapts exactly and specifically to the stress that burned it. Your skin does not know that you want it to get darker. It only knows what the sun tells it. And the sun only talked to it for 15 minutes. It can't get any darker than the 15 minutes makes it get, because the 15 minutes is what it is adapting to. If you just got darker every time you were exposed to the sun, we'd all be black, especially those of us who live in a sunny area, since we all get out of the car and walk into the house or work several times a day. The skin adapts not to total accumulated exposure, but to the longest exposure, the hardest exposure. If you want your skin to get darker, you have to stay out longer in order to give the skin more stress than it has already adapted to. The widespread failure to comprehend this pivotal aspect of adaptation is why so few people actually understand exercise programming. Training follows exactly the same principle as getting a tan. A stress is imposed on the body and it adapts to the stress, but only if the stress is designed properly. You wouldn't lay out for 2 minutes and assume that that would make you brown, because 2 minutes isn't enough stress to cause an adaptation. Likewise, only a stupid kid lays out for an hour on each side the first day, because the stress is so overwhelmingly damaging that it cannot be recovered from in a constructive way. Lots and lots of people come into the gym and bench 225 every Monday and Friday for years, never even attempting to increase the weight, the sets, the reps, the speed, or the pace between the sets. Some people don't care, but some are genuinely puzzled that their bench doesn't go up, even though they have not asked it to go up. And some people bench press once every 3 or 4 weeks, or maybe even more rarely than that, using some arbitrary number like their own body weight for 10 reps, then 9, then 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and wonder why their bench doesn't go up, and also wonder why they're so damn sore all the time. Your bench press strength doesn't adapt to the total number of times you've been to the gym to bench, or to your sincerest hope that it will get stronger. It adapts to the stress imposed on it by the work done with the barbell. Furthermore, it adapts to exactly the kind of stress imposed on it. If you do sets of 20, you get good at doing 20s. If you do heavy singles, you get better at doing those. But singles and 20s are two very different things. The muscles and nervous system function differently when doing these two very different things, and they require two different sets of physiological capacities to perform them, and thus they cause the body to adapt differently to that stress. The adaptation occurs in response to the stress, and specifically to that stress, because the stress is what demands the adaptation. This is why calluses form, where the bar rubs your hand, and not on the back of your hand, or on your face, or on your arms. It can obviously be no other way. Furthermore, the stress must be capable of being recovered from. Unlike the 2 hours of sun the first day, or the 55 bench reps once every 6 weeks, the stress must be appropriate for the trainee receiving it. If the stress is so overwhelming that you cannot recover from it in time to apply more of it in a time frame which permits accumulated adaptation, it is useless as a beneficial tool that drives progress. An awareness of this central organizing principle of physiology as it applies to physical activity is essential to programming design. Exercise and training are two different things. Exercise is physical activity performed for its own sake, a workout done for the effect it produces today, during the workout, or right after you're through. Training, on the other hand, is physical activity done with a longer-term goal in mind, the constituent workouts of which are specifically designed to achieve that goal. If a program of physical activity is not designed to get you stronger or faster or better conditioned by producing a specific stress to which a specific desirable adaptation can occur, then you don't get to call it training. It's just exercise. For most people, exercise is perfectly adequate. It's certainly better than sitting on your ass. But for athletes, an improvement in strength provides more improvement in performance than any other adaptation does. especially if the athlete is not already very strong. Strength is the basis of athletic ability. If you are a good athlete, you are stronger than a less good athlete at the same level of skill. If you want to be a better athlete, you get stronger. If you're already very strong, you need to devote most of your attention to the development of the other aspects of performance. But there is a very high likelihood that you're not that strong, since most people are not. You may think you're very strong, but really, you know you could get a lot stronger, don't you? You may have convinced everybody else that you're strong enough. You may even be convinced of this yourself. Your coach may have told you so, too. This deception is not productive, though, because if you can get stronger, you should do so. And a lack of strength may be why you're not performing as well as you know you should be. If your progress is stuck and has been for a while, get stronger and see what happens. And for a strength training program to actually work, you must do something that requires that you be stronger to get it done. And this requirement must be inherent in the program design. The less experienced the athlete, the simpler the program should be. And the more advanced the athlete, the more complex the program must be. We're going to take advantage of a phenomenon I have called the novice effect. Simply described, this is what happens when a previously untrained person begins to lift weights. He gets stronger very quickly at first, and then improves less and less rapidly as he gets stronger and stronger. It is nothing more than the commonly observed principle of diminishing returns applied to adaptive physiology. Rank novices are not strong enough to tax themselves beyond their ability to recover because they are so thoroughly unadapted to stress. They have made almost no progress on the road to the fulfillment of their athletic potential, and almost anything they do that is not heinous abuse will cause an adaptation. When an untrained person starts an exercise program, he gets stronger. He always does, no matter what the program is. He gets stronger because anything he does that is physically harder than what he's been doing constitutes a stress to which he is not adapted. And adaptation will thus occur if he provides for recovery. And this stress will always produce more strength, because that is the most basic physical adaptation to any physical stress that requires the body to produce force. For a rank novice trainee, riding a bicycle will make his bench press increase for a short time. This doesn't mean that cycling is a good program for the bench press. It just means that for an utterly unadapted person, the cycling served as an adaptive stimulus. The problem with cycling for a novice bench presser is that it rapidly loses its ability to act as an efficient enough systemic force production stress to continue driving improvement on the bench, since it does not produce a force production stress specific to the bench. The thing that differentiates a good program from a less good program is its ability to continue stimulating the desired adaptation. So, by definition, a program that requires a regular increase in some aspect of its stress is an effective program for a novice, and one that doesn't is less effective. For a novice, any program is better than no program at all. So all programs work with varying degrees of efficiency. And this is why everybody thinks that their program works, and why you'll always find perfectly honest testimonials for every single new exercise program on TV or on the internet. But nothing works as well as moderately increasing some loading parameter each time for as long as an adaptation to the increase continues to occur, because a gradual increase in load is specifically designed to produce both stress and adaptation from that stress. And since the best way to produce athletic improvement in novices is to increase their strength, a program that increases total body strength in a linear fashion is the best one for a novice athlete to use if he is to improve his performance in the shortest time possible. It seems rather apparent that there can only be one efficient way to program barbell training for a novice, and that is to apply a linear increase in force production stress while using basic exercises that work the whole body. If applied in a way that can be supported by adequate recovery from the stress in a time frame that efficiently produces progress, this approach always produces a linear increase in strength because it takes advantage of the most basic rule of biology. Organisms adapt to their environment. If the stress causes an adaptation, and if the stress is not overwhelming in its magnitude. Ranked novices can be trained close to the limit of their ability every time they train, precisely because that ability is at such a low level relative to their genetic potential. As a result of this relatively hard training, novices get strong very quickly. Novices can recover from relatively hard training because they're weak, and the training is not really that hard in absolute terms. Certainly not relative to what they will eventually be able to do. Weak people can obviously get stronger faster than already strong people can. But that changes rapidly, and as you progress through your training career, your program should get more and more complicated as a result of the changing nature of your adaptive response. The intermediate trainee has advanced to the point where the stress required for change is high enough that when the stress is applied in consecutive workouts, it exceeds the trainee's capacity for recovery within that period of time. Intermediate trainees are capable of training hard enough that some allowances for active recovery must be incorporated into the training program. But progress still comes faster for these athletes when they're challenged often by maximum efforts. Advanced athletes are working at levels close enough to their genetic potential that great care should be taken to ensure enough variability in the intensity and volume that overtraining does not become a problem. So, as a general rule, you need to try to add weight to the work sets of the exercise every time you train, until you can't do this anymore. This is the basic tenet of progressive resistance training, and setting up the program this way is what makes it different from exercise. For as long as possible, make sure that you lift a little more weight each time. Everyone can do this for a while, and some can do it for longer than others, depending on individual genetic capability, diet, and rest. If you are challenged, you will adapt, and if you are not, you won't. Training makes the challenge a scheduled event instead of an accident of mood or whim, and certainly not a random occurrence within an exercise program. Before you even get through the door of the weight room, you should already know every single thing you will do while you're there, the order in which you will do it, how much weight you'll do it with, and how to determine the next workout based on what you'll do today. No one should ever arrive to train not knowing exactly what to do. Wandering around the gym, deciding what looks fun, doing it till the fun stops, and then doing something else is not training. Each training session must have a defined, achievable goal, usually an increase over the previous workout in the amount of weight lifted, or another definable objective based on the person's training history. Strength in each exercise will progress differently due to differences in the amount of muscle mass involved and in the sensitivity of the movement to technique problems. The more muscle mass involved in an exercise, the faster the exercise can get strong, and the stronger it has the potential to be. The deadlift, for instance, improves rather quickly for most people, faster than any of the other lifts due to its limited range of motion around the hips and knees, and the fact that so many muscles are involved in the lift. In contrast, the press goes up rather slowly due to the smaller muscles of the shoulder girdle, while the shorter kinetic chain of the bench press allows it to progress faster than the press. For a trained athlete, the deadlift will be stronger than the squat, the squat stronger than the bench press and the power clean fairly close to each other, with the bench usually a little stronger, and the press lighter than the other four. This distribution holds for the majority of athletes and is predictive of what should happen. For example, if you bench more than you deadlift, something is out of whack. You may have a grip problem, an injury, or a motivational discontinuity, you know, like a strong dislike for the deadlift. In any case, this situation should be addressed before a strength imbalance causes problems for the other lifts. The differences in the nature of the lifts must be considered in all aspects of their use in the weight room. Learning the lifts. Learn the squat first, because it is the most important exercise of the program, and its skills are critical to all other movements. Once you begin this program, if you've been taught the movement incorrectly, you'll have to unlearn it, which would be the worst-case scenario. If you have never been shown the movement, it will be easier to learn because you won't have incorrect motor pathways to fix, which would be the best-case scenario. It's much harder to correct an embedded movement pattern than it is to learn a new one, as any sports coach will attest. The problem is particularly evident in the weight room, where correct technique is the essence of everything we do, and a stubborn form problem resulting from prior incorrect instruction can be costly in terms of time and progress. Assuming that you have the time to learn more than one exercise the first day, and you should arrange things so that you do, the next exercise will be the press. The squat has fatigued the lower body, and the press gives it an opportunity to rest while another skill is introduced. The press is usually easy to learn because of the absence of preconceived notions acquired from pictures in the muscle magazines or from helpful buddies. Since the press is relatively unfamiliar to most people these days, it makes a good first day upper body exercise, grabbing your attention so that you know we're actually doing something different in the weight room this time around. The deadlift will be the last thing to learn the first day. The deadlift is where you learn to set the lower back, and doing this at the conclusion of the first day after the squat will solidify the concept of back position and make it more understandable to your body and your mind. The mechanics of the correct pull from the floor are crucial to the clean, and the deadlift serves as the best introduction to the idea that pulling from the floor is not complicated. If the squat that first day has been difficult or has taken a long time, or if you are older or very deconditioned, the first deadlift workout might just be an introduction with light weight and no attempt to work up to a heavy work set. Going light prevents excessive soreness after the first session, which would definitely compromise the second one. The next deadlift workout can be heavier and the target weight more easily and accurately determined after you've recovered from the first squat workout. You'll learn the other two lifts at the next workout, provided that you encounter no major problems. Start the second workout with a squat and then learn to bench press. Your shoulders and arms may be tired from the press, but this will have little effect on the bench, a stronger movement anyway. The bench press provides the same break for the lower body between exercises that the press does, and you'll need this break because you'll be power cleaning next. The power clean, being the most technically challenging of the exercises, should be introduced last, and only after the deadlift is correct off the floor. If that occurs in the first workout, you can learn the clean in the second workout. If you need more time to correct the deadlift, take it. Introducing the power clean too early will produce problems since the bottom part of the movement depends on the deadlifts being fairly automatic. workout order. For novices, and in fact for most advanced trainees, a very simple approach to training should be taken. Effective workouts need not be long, complicated affairs. Many people are under the impression that progress in the weight room means learning more ways to curl, the basic one or two not obviously being sufficient. But progress means more strength, not more exercises. The variable we manipulate is load, not exercise selection. You do not need to do many different exercises to get strong. You need to get strong on a very few important exercises, movements that train the whole body as a system, not as a collection of separate body parts. The problem with the programs advocated by all the national exercise organizations is that they fail to recognize this basic principle. The body best adapts as a whole organism to stress applied to the whole organism. The more stress that can be applied to as much of the body at one time as possible, the more effective and productive the adaptation will be. For a rank novice, the simplest of workouts is in order. This short program could be followed for the first few workouts. A. Squat, press, deadlift. B. Squat, bench press, deadlift. The two workouts alternate across the Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule for the first couple of weeks until the freshness of the deadlift is worn off a little, and after the quick initial gains establish the deadlift well ahead of the squat, which it should. At this point, the power clean would be introduced, and the workout schedule is A. Squat, press, deadlift. B. Squat, bench press, power clean. After the first couple of weeks, you squat every workout and alternate the press and the bench press and the deadlift and the power clean. This schedule is for 3 days a week, allowing a two-day rest at the end of the week. It will mean that 1 week you press and deadlift twice, and the next week you bench and power clean twice. Do the exercises in the listed order. Squats first, the upper body movement second, and the pulling movement third. This sequence allows the squat to get everything warm for the next exercise, which it does quite well. Then the upper body exercise allows the legs and back to rest and recover for the pulling movement to be done next. For most people, and for quite some time, this schedule will work very well. After 2 or 3 more weeks, chin-ups can be added as the only really useful assistance exercise at this point in the program. You might decide to add 3 sets of chins after your power cleans and stay with this program for as many months as possible. Or back extensions or glute ham raises can be added in place of pulling every workout, dropping the deadlift frequency to every 5th workout, alternated with power cleans. This might be necessary if recovery is becoming a problem, as it might be for an older trainee, a female trainee, or someone who just refuses to eat and sleep enough according to the program. Now the program looks like this. A. Squat, press, deadlift or power clean. B. Squat, bench press, back extensions, chin-ups. This makes the next 2 weeks look like this. Week 1, Monday, squat, bench press, back extensions, chin-ups. Wednesday, squat, press, deadlift. Friday, squat, bench press, back extensions, chin-ups. Week 2, Monday, squat, press, power clean. Wednesday, squat, bench press, back extensions, chin-ups. Friday, squat, press, deadlift. Any supplemental exercises other than chin-ups should be chosen very carefully so as not to interfere with the progress on these 5 crucial movements. Remember, if progress is being made on the primary exercise, you are getting stronger and your objective is being accomplished. If in doubt, leave it out. Ha ha. After you progress beyond the novice phase, you can still use this workout with very few additions. The variety is introduced into the programming of each lift, and variations are made in the workload. Even for more advanced trainees, it is unnecessary to add lots of different exercises to the workout, as the purpose is always served when strength levels increase on the basic lifts. Any assistance exercises that are added must be kept in their proper perspective. They are there to help you get stronger in the basic lifts, not as an end in themselves. The press and the bench press, for example, will always be more important than arm work, and if curls and triceps exercises interfere with your recovery from pressing or benching instead of adding to your strength in these lifts, they're being misused. Most Olympic weightlifting coaches will use a workout order that places the faster movements before the slower movements, so that the explosive lifts, the snatch and the clean and jerk and their variations, are performed before the strength exercises like squats and presses. This order makes sense if the competitive lifts are the emphasis of the program for a post-novice lifter, even though some of the most competitive nations in Olympic weightlifting don't always do it this way. Our program uses the power clean as the explosive movement, but since none of the exercises in this novice program are approached as competitive lifts, doing the power clean as the last exercise in the workout is more productive for strength development because it leaves the emphasis on the squat. Doing the squat first provides a superior warm-up for all the subsequent movements, and doing the squat while you're fresh grants it the attention it deserves as the most important exercise in the program. Remember, strength is the basis of power. Warm-up sets serve two very important purposes. First, warm-ups actually make the soft tissue, the muscles and tendons and the ligaments that comprise the joints, warmer. General warm-up exercises increase the temperature in the soft tissue and mobilize the synovial fluid in the joints. These exercises include walking fast or jogging, riding an exercise bike, which is really a better method due to the greater range of motion the knees are exposed to during the exercise, better preparing them for the squat, or using a rowing machine, which probably is the best method due to its range of motion and the full involvement of the back and the arms as well as the legs. Specific warm-ups, like the empty bar sets of the barbell exercise itself, also serve to warm, mobilize, and stretch the specific tissues involved in that particular movement. This step is important for injury prevention, since it is more difficult to injure a warm body than a cold one. The elevation of tissue temperature is very important and requires that several variables be kept in mind. The temperature of the training facility should be considered as a factor in this phase of warm-up. A cold room interferes with effective warm-up, while a hot room aids it. Winter months and summer months produce different warm-up requirements for most athletes who will usually arrive at training feeling different in August than they do in January, at least in the Northern Hemisphere. A healing injury needs extra warm-up for the affected tissues, and the age of the trainee affects warm-up requirements as well. Young people are less sensitive to a lack of warm-up than adults are, and the older the adult, the more time is needed for pre-workout preparation. The second function of warm-ups is especially important in barbell training. It allows you to practice the movement pattern before the weight gets heavy. Light warm-up sets, done first with the empty bar and then progressively heavier until the work sets are loaded, prepare the movement pattern itself so that when the weight gets heavy, you can focus your attention on pushing hard instead of worrying about how to push. The motor pathway, the neuromuscular adaptation to a complicated movement pattern, must be prepared every time it is used, whether you're throwing a baseball or doing a squat. The more familiar the movement pattern, the less critical this aspect of warm-up becomes, but for a novice, it is always very important. The warm-up sets prepare the motor pathway at the same time that they prepare the tissues for the upcoming heavier work. While you're doing your first sets, you can address and fix form errors so that during your work sets, you can focus more on driving the load and less on maintaining correct form. It is foolishness to neglect warm-up sets. Many government school programs, in an attempt to implement a strength program without allotting sufficient time to do it, omit most of this crucial part of the workout. The coach in charge of a program that omits warm-ups before work sets commits malpractice. Please heed the following rather strong statement. If your schedule does not allow time for proper warm-up sets, it does not allow time for training at all. It is better to omit strength training from your program than to suffer the inevitable injuries that will result from lack of warm-up. Yes, warm-up sets are that critical. Warm-ups will vary with the lift being warmed up. The room is cold, an additional warm-up on a rower or exercise bike might be useful to raise overall body temperature. If the room is warm, this will not be necessary. The squat, by its nature, is a total body movement, and being the first exercise of the workout, serves quite well as its own warm-up. It should be carefully and thoroughly prepared with a couple of empty bar sets, and then as many as 5 sets between those and the work sets. The next upper body movement will benefit from this preparation and, in the absence of an injury, can be warmed up adequately with only 3 or 4 sets. The deadlift will be warm from the squat, provided that pressing hasn't taken so long that you've gotten cold. The power clean, being a more complex movement, will require more warm-up for technique purposes. Assistance exercises, if they're done, will be done last with already warm muscles and joints and will require only 1 or 2 sets of warm-up. Any area that is injured will require additional warming up. If the injured area does not respond to the warm-up sets by starting to feel much better after you do 2 or 3 sets with the empty bar, you'll have to decide whether to continue with light sets or wait until the area has healed better. First, some terminology clarification. A work set is the heaviest weight to be done in a given workout, the sets that actually produce the stress which causes the adaptation. Warm-ups are the lighter sets done before the work sets. The term sets across refers to multiple work sets done with the same weight. The work sets are the ones that provide the training effect. They are the sets that make strength go up, since they are the heaviest. For novices, they're the weight you haven't done before. The warm-up sets serve only to prepare the lifter for the work sets. They should never interfere with the work sets. So plan your warm-ups with this principle in mind. The last warm-up set should never be so heavy that it interferes with the work sets. But it must be heavy enough to allow you to feel some actual weight before you do the heavy work set. It might consist only of 1 or 2 reps, even though the work sets will be 5 or more. For instance, if the work sets are to be 225 times 5 times 3, that would be 3 sets of 5 at 225, then 215 for 5 would not be an efficient choice for the last warm-up. A better choice would be 205 for 2, or even 195 for 1, depending on your preference, skill, and experience. Since the focus is on completing all the reps of the work sets, the warm-ups must be chosen to save gas for the heavier sets, while still being heavy enough that the first work set is not a surprise in terms of its weight. As an example of the importance of proper warm-up, let's examine the effects of a bad warm-up carried to the extreme. There's an old workout known as the pyramid still floating around weight rooms and gyms all over the world. For the bench press, this workout would go something like this. 135 for 10, 155 for 8, 175 for 6, 185 for 5, 195 for 4, 205 for 3, 215 for 2, and 225 for 1. By the time you finish the last set, you might feel like you've had a pretty good workout. The problem is that you have done 6,390 pounds of work before getting to the last set, a single at 225. So your chances of ever increasing this last single are very slim. By the time you reach what should be a work set, you're all used up, since all of your warm-up sets have essentially been work sets too. The warm-ups didn't prepare you to increase your work sets, so you will never lift any more weight than you did the last time you did this workout, and you are therefore quite thoroughly stuck. If the warm-up sets fatigue you instead of prepare you, they are not warm-ups, and your strength cannot increase. As a general rule, it is best to start with an empty bar, 45 pound, 20 kilo. Determine the work set or sets, and then divide the difference between 45 and the work set weight into even increments. Most people will need to select 3 to 5 warm-up sets. Depending on the work set weight, extremely heavy weights may require more increments for the trainee to get warm so that the jumps are not too big. If additional warm-up is desirable, as it might be in a cold room in the winter for older lifters or injured people, multiple sets can be done with the empty bar and the first loaded set. This approach provides the benefits of the warm-up without causing fatigue from doing too much work at a heavier weight too close to the work sets. As the warm-ups progress from the empty bar up through heavier weights, the time between the sets should increase a little. As a general rule, the time between sets should be sufficient for you to recover from the previous set, so that fatigue from the prior set does not limit the one you're about to do. The heavier the set, the longer the break should be. This type of training requires that all of the reps of each set be completed. The program is based on lifting more weight each workout, not on completing each workout or each exercise faster. A strength training program is designed to make you stronger, able to exert more force and lift more weight. Some training programs used in bodybuilding rely on the accumulated fatigue produced by short breaks between sets, and these programs specifically increase muscular endurance. Although endurance increases as a function of strength, it is not a parameter specifically targeted by our program at the novice level. You will benefit more by lifting heavier weights through the efficient timing of sets to allow for recovery than by trying to decrease the time between the sets and thereby allowing fatigue to limit your ability to exert maximum force on the next set. The time between sets will vary in a couple of ways with the strength level of the athlete. Ranked novices are not typically strong enough to fatigue themselves very much, and they can go fairly quickly, just a minute or two between sets, since they're not lifting much weight anyway. The first two or three sets can be done as fast as the bar can be loaded, especially if two or more people are training together. More advanced trainees need more time, perhaps 5 minutes, between the last warm-ups and the work sets. If they're doing sets across, very strong lifters may need 10 minutes or more between work sets. Work sets. The number of work sets to be done after the warm-ups will vary with the exercise and the individual. The squat benefits from sets across, 3 sets for novice trainees, as does the bench press and the press. The deadlift is hard enough and is usually done after a lot of squatting, and one heavy set is usually sufficient, with more tending to overtrain most people. The power clean can be done with more sets across, since the weight is lighter relative to the squat and deadlift, and the limiting factors are technique and explosive display, not absolute strength. Multiple work sets cause the body to adapt to a larger volume of work, an adaptation that comes in handy for those training for sports performance. One school of thought holds that one work set, if done at a high enough intensity, is sufficient to stimulate muscular growth. For novices, several problems with this approach immediately present themselves. First, inexperienced trainees do not yet know how to produce maximum intensity under the bar, and they will not know how for quite some time. Second, if they don't know how to work at a very high intensity, more than one set will be needed to accumulate sufficient stress to cause an adaptation to occur. One set will not provide enough. Third, and most important, one intense set adapts the body to work hard for one intense set, since exercise adaptation, as we know, is specific to the stress. It is true that strength is the most general athletic adaptation, and the more force you can produce, the better. But for a novice trainee, the context in which strength is produced is quite important. And for the same reason we don't train novices with one rep max work, we don't use 2 to 5 rep max level efforts either. Except for sumo wrestling and a couple of others, sports do not usually involve one isolated, relatively brief, intense effort, but generally involve repeated bouts of work. And one set at very high intensity is not the best way to build force production capacity if you lack the experience to effectively produce enough force in one low-volume set. A sets-across routine more closely mimics the effort usually involved in sports and more effectively allows the trainee to learn to work hard and therefore produces a more useful adaptation. In fact, one of the most effective strategies for intermediates is to do the squat, bench, and press for 5 sets across of 5 reps once a week as one of the 3 workouts, increasing the weight used by very small, manageable amounts each week. The easiest way to stop your progress between workouts is to fail to finish all the reps of all the prescribed work sets. And the easiest way to make this happen is to fail to rest long enough between the work sets to allow fatigue from the previous set to dissipate before you start the next set. If fatigue accumulates as the work sets progress, the predictable outcome will be that instead of 5, 5, and 5 reps, you will do 5, 4, and 3, when 5, 5, and 5 was actually possible had you waited long enough between sets. This is the most common error made by novice trainees, the confusion of strength training with conditioning work. The program requires that you increase weight every workout for as long as possible, and if you fail to complete all the reps of all the work sets, you cannot increase the weight in your next workout. Make sure you give yourself enough time to complete your reps. If the weight is actually too heavy because you took too big a jump or you have not recovered adequately from the previous workout, then your programming must change. But impatience is a poor reason to allow progress to come to a halt. How many reps should a work set consist of? It depends on the adaptation desired. 5 reps is a good number for strength training purposes, and understanding the reasons for this is essential so that you don't become distracted by other programming options. When you're trying to understand the nature of any given set of variables, it's often helpful to start with the extremes, the limits of which can reveal things about the stuff in the middle. In this case, let's compare a 1 rep max, or 1RM as it's abbreviated, squat, to a 20 rep max squat, and look at the different physiological requirements for doing each set. The single most important contributing factor to the successful heavy 1 rep attempt is the ability of the muscles involved to produce force. The heavier the weight, the more force required to move it, as should be obvious. The 1 rep set doesn't take very long to do, so muscular endurance is not a factor, and neither is cardiovascular capacity for the same reason. Even a bone-on-bone limit attempt doesn't take more than a few seconds. The only thing that the muscles must do is produce sufficient force to overcome the weight on the bar as it moves through the range of motion of the lift one time. So, in response to 1 rep max training, the body adapts by getting better at producing high amounts of force 1 rep at a time. It does this by adjusting the components of the system that produce the force: the nervous system, the neuromuscular system, and the muscles themselves, specifically the components of the muscle that actually produce the contraction. There are other adaptations that are secondary to the main ones, but they all involve helping the body perform a brief, intense effort. Psychological adaptations enable the lifter to overcome his fear of a heavy weight. The heart adapts by getting better at working with a huge load on the back. And the blood vessels adapt by becoming capable of responding to the demands of increased peak blood pressure. The tendons thicken to better transmit force, and the ligaments thicken and tighten to hold the joints together under the load. The skin under the bar gets thicker, the eyeballs get used to bugging out, and new words are learned that express the emotions accompanying success or failure with a new PR squat. But the primary adaptation is increased force production. On the other hand, a heavy set of 20 reps for a squat is an entirely different experience, one of the most demanding in sports training. A set of 20 squats can usually be done with a weight previously assumed to be a 10 rep max, given the correct mental preparation and a certain suicidal desire to either grow or die. The demands of a 20-rep max, and therefore the adaptation to it, are completely different than that for a 1-rep max. A 20RM is done with about 80% of the weight of a 1RM, and even the last rep is not really heavy in terms of the amount of force necessary to squat it. The hard part of a set of 20 is that the last 5 reps are done in a state resembling a hellish nightmare, making yourself squat another rep with the pain from falling muscle pH, an inability to catch your breath, and the inability of your heart to beat any faster than it already is. The demands of a 20-rep max involve continued muscle contraction under circumstances of increasing oxygen debt and metabolic depletion. In response to this type of stress, the body gets better at responding to the high metabolic demand that is created. Systemic adaptations are primarily cardiovascular in nature, since the main source of stress involves managing blood flow and oxygen supply during and after the set. The heart gets better at pumping blood under a load. The vessels expand and become more numerous. And the lungs get better at oxygenating the blood, although not in the same way that a runner's lungs do. The main muscular adaptations are those that support local metabolism during the effort. Glycolytic capacity increases. The contractile part of the muscle tissue gets better at working under the acidic conditions produced by the stress of the long work set. Psychologically, 20-rep max work is very hard due to the pain, and lifters who are good at it develop the ability to displace themselves from the situation during the set, or they just get very tough. It is essential to understand that the one rep max work does not produce the conditioning stress that the 20 rep max work does, and that the long set of 20 reps is not heavy in the same way that the 1RM is. They are both hard, but for completely different reasons. Because they are so completely different, they cause the body to adapt in two completely different ways. These extremes represent a continuum, with a heavy set of three more closely resembling 1RM in its adaptation, and a heavy set of 10 sharing more of the characteristics of a 20RM. Sets of five reps are a very effective compromise for the novice, and even for the advanced lifter more interested in strength than in muscular endurance. They allow enough weight to be used that force production must increase. But they are not so heavy that the cardiovascular component is completely absent from the exercise. Sets of five may be the most useful rep range you will use over your entire training career. And as long as you lift weights, sets of five will be important. Progression. The effective training of novices takes advantage of the fact that untrained people get strong very quickly at first, and this effect tapers off over time, until advanced trainees, who are already strong, gain more strength only by carefully manipulating all training variables. Novices can and should increase the weight of the work sets every workout until this is no longer possible. In fact, novices get strong as fast as the workout makes them get strong. And what was hard last time is not hard today. They can adapt so quickly that the concept of maximum intensity is hard to define for them. If a kid gets strong as fast as his work sets increase, a 10-pound jump is not really heavier relative to his improved strength. The key to maintaining this rate of improvement is the careful selection of the amount of weight you increase each time. Work set weight increases will vary with the exercise, your age and sex, your experience, and the consistency of your adherence to the program. For most male trainees with good technique, the squat can be increased 10 pounds per workout, assuming three workouts per week for 2 to 3 weeks. When you miss the last rep or two of your last work set, the easy gains are beginning to wane, and you can start taking 5-pound jumps for several months. Back up 5 pounds and start over with 5-pound jumps. For very young kids, older trainees, and most women, 5-pound jumps are sufficient to start with, and then smaller jumps will be required, as will the lighter barbell plates that make smaller jumps possible. That would be lighter than the standard 2.5-pound plates found in most gyms. You'll need to provide that equipment for yourself, most likely. If it's important for women and kids to make progress, and why would it not be, it's important to have the right equipment to train them correctly. You might need to make plates out of 2-inch flat washers, or buy some smaller plates now available and easily obtainable for this purpose. But it is obviously necessary, so get it done. Small plates are available from various sources on the web, and baseball bat weights will usually fit the bar quite well. It will be useful at some point for everyone to have access to light plates, since progress on the lifts will eventually slow down to the point where they will be useful even for advanced men. Don't be afraid to take small jumps. Instead, do be afraid to stop improving. Some very genetically gifted, heavier men can take bigger jumps of 15 or 20 pounds for the first 2 weeks. Anything more than this is usually excessive, even for the most gifted athlete, since an increase of 60 pounds a week in the squat is not going to be realistically sustainable for very long. Don't be in a big hurry to find your sticking point early in your training progression. It's always preferable to take smaller jumps and sustain the progress than it is to take bigger jumps and get stuck early. Getting stuck means missing any of the reps of the prescribed work sets, since the weight cannot be increased until all of the reps of all of the sets have been done as prescribed. Remember, it is easier to not get stuck than it is to get unstuck. In the bench press, the muscles used are smaller, so the increases will be smaller. If the first workout is properly determined, their initial strength level, most men can do 5-pound jumps for a while, perhaps 3 to 4 weeks, if they are alternating bench presses and presses. Some talented, heavier men can make a few 10-pound jumps, but not many. Older guys, the very young, and women will need to start with small jumps, and the special light plates are particularly important for these trainees to keep making progress on the bench. Do not be afraid to slow the increases down to very small jumps on the bench. Remember that an increase of even 2 pounds a week means a 104-pound increase in a year, not a shameful amount of progress for the bench press. The press will behave similarly to the bench press, since the muscles involved in moving the bar are small relative to the squatting and deadlifting muscles. The press uses lots of muscles, true, but the limiting factors are the strength and the efficiency of the mechanics of the smaller upper body muscles, and no chain is stronger than its weakest link, as the saying goes. The same jumps used for the bench can usually be used for the press, although the press will start off at somewhere between 50 and 70% of the weight used in the bench press. Since you're alternating the two exercises, they will stay about the same weight apart as they increase. The deadlift will progress faster than any of the other lifts because the start position, basically a half squat or maybe above, is very efficient mechanically and because virtually every muscle in the body is involved in the movement. Most men can add 15 pounds to the deadlift each workout for a couple of weeks, with the very young women and older guys taking a more conservative approach. But 5-pound jumps in the deadlift should be sustainable for months. This being the case, the deadlift will start out with heavier weights than the other lifts for all trainees. It should get stronger faster, and it will continue to be stronger than the other lifts unless you become an advanced powerlifting competitor. A trainee who benches more than he deadlifts needs to stop avoiding his deadlift workouts. But since the deadlift involves more muscles and more weight than the other lifts, it is also easier to overtrain. For a novice, the deadlift should not be trained using sets across. It is really easy to get really beat up doing a lot of heavy deadlifts. One work set at the intensity of a real work set is quite sufficient to produce improvement. It is interesting that the power clean behaves more like the bench press than like the squat or the deadlift in terms of the way it increases over time. The reason for this involves the biomechanical nature of the movement and the factors limiting its progress. The power clean is explosive and technical, and it involves more than just absolute strength. It is limited at the top of the movement by the lifter's ability to get the bar accelerated and up onto his shoulders. And the heavier the weight, the more the power clean depends on the lifter's ability to generate enough momentum to get the bar high enough to rack. This momentum is controlled by the lifter's ability to explode, to recruit lots of motor units into contraction instantly, a physical attribute that is largely dependent on genetics and is thus less responsive to training than strength is. The power clean will move up maybe 5 pounds per workout for most men. If the power snatch is used, it will also move up slower for the same reasons, albeit with a little lighter weight than that used in the power clean. Women and younger, older, lighter trainees will need to introduce smaller plates earlier in the progression. Ancillary exercises, which are by their nature inefficient isolation-type exercises, produce very slow progress. Anybody claiming rapid gains on triceps extensions or barbell curls is not utilizing particularly strict form and should be criticized. When these smaller jumps can no longer be sustained, a trainee can be considered an intermediate, and the fun begins with more complicated manipulation of training variables. This variation in exercises, tonnage, and intensity for the purpose of ensuring continued progress is referred to as periodization.